Hello, everyone, and welcome to our inaugural episode of The Seeds of Liberty Presents Forced to Freedom with Donnie and Aaron. I'm sitting in on this first episode to kind of get them into the swing of things, introduce them to the our little podcasting situation we got going on. And, you know, the idea behind this show is we have Aaron, who is an ex-cop and an ex-Army or Marine?
Army.
Army, ex-Army. And we have Donnie, who is ex-Navy and Army, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so we have two guys who've kind of lived it, okay? And this wasn't like they were in and went AWOL. These guys, they were in it, okay? And this is for anybody who is curious about volunteerism and really wants to have a brother, so to say, a brother in arms, to hear it from someone, you know, that you can relate to instead of someone who's never served, never been a police, never been in the Army, never had to deal with the bullshit you had to deal with, etc., etc., and could really understand where you're coming from with any objections you have towards a stateless society through a, you know, a society not built on coercion but built on voluntary interactions. But first up, we're going to just introduce these guys. Donnie's going to give us a little, you know, a little quick biopic, maybe 5-10 minutes on, you know, basically his life, how he grew up, when he got in the Army, why he got in the Army or the Navy first, and then, you know, how he came to realize why he needed to get out.
Oh, okay. So, I was born, raised, started off Catholic, but my parents converted to Baptist, rather strict Baptist, when I was about 8 or 9. So very right wing, you know, typical standard right wing, lower class. Well, not super low, but low enough. You know, lived in a trailer. Kind of always taught, you know, the military is a good way to, you know, get up, get out, make a your own way in the world. Kind of had those natural tendencies. I like to hunt, I like to shoot, I like to dive, I like to do all that, you know, all the crap they put in the commercials. I like to do all that stuff. So, joined the Army when I was 18. Was an ordnance technician. Got a little tired of that, got out. Right during the, it was like 99 when I got out, and joined my National Guard unit, an infantry unit. It was good. It was really actually one of the better units I was ever in. It was not one of those Pogue units. 9/11 happened, you know, everybody kind of got the whole extra testosterone boost. Lots of people didn't know what they wanted to do. Some guys went back to active duty, and after talking to I had a former SEAL in my unit. I had 2 Rangers. I had an ex-Delta guy. Like, you know, for being a National Guard unit, it was a very good place to train and learn and understand. So they kind of sized me up a little bit. They said, you probably, you know, want to go SEAL. So I joined the Navy. 3 years later, injured on my way to Buds. I never even went out the. I just got injured during the train up and work up and, you know, blew off my stomach. So I couldn't dive. Not supposed to die, but and without that SEAL incentive to be in the Navy, that's really not. So I got tired of the Navy. I went back to the Army. Got injured at EOD school, and they sent me to be an analyst, which is irony. The last thing that they should have sent me to. By this time, you know, 2008 is when I went back to the Army. I was already a constitutionalist, minarchist. I wasn't quite pushing libertarian yet, but then they sent me to a school and taught me how to think, gave me rules of logic, things of that nature. By far the worst thing the Army should have ever done.
Taught you the way they wanted you to think, huh?
Right. Well, there was a guy, he kind of drew a box on the board. He's like, the Army, you know, you think about all these things inside the box, and what we want you to do is go outside of the box. And most of the people just accepted that, but there was 2 of us in the class who went, hey, that little box is just a box on the board, and that board is just in the room, and then the room, and the building, and then the building, and the planet, and you can see the look on the instructor's face. Saying, "Oh no, no, not too, not that far, not that far," and yeah, we were gone. Like, we were ruined from that point on. So, you know, they can't win them all. So, actually dated a libertarian girl, and not the libertarian girl, just a libertarian girl, kind of spun me a little weird with the constitutionalist stuff, and, you know, we broke it up, but I still kept going, you know, looking, oh, contradiction this, contradiction that, and down the rabbit hole I went. So, I mean,
it's a scary, treacherous thing, especially when you're, you know, you're this far into, what I would consider, you know, at least philosophical enemy territory, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I was 13 years in at that point. Like, I had 13 years active plus my guard time. So I had a lot invested in it, and just kept going farther down the hole. And it took probably about 18 months to 2 years between being from the constitutionalist, made all my piss poor arguments. I held on.
One of those 3 percenters.
Oh yeah, 3%, and I
was represent 3%.
I gave up. Fortunately, since then, you know, in the analyst mindset, I gave up everything. Like, literally, I looked at myself one morning while I was brushing my teeth and said, "You're a goddamn idiot. Just accept it, and you need to open your eyes and your ears, and you need to retrain." And that was actually one of the best things I ever did, because it was so much easier, instead of making more arguments and stressing myself out and trying to figure it out, it just really became, this is the way it is. This is the paradigm that you know, everybody feels it. Everybody feels that there's something not quite right. There's something there. I just don't know what I'm missing. You know, it was there my whole life. You know, it's just, it's got to be something. What is it? What is it? It's that little, and
I mean,
and there it was.
I was never in the military, but for my whole life, it was always me wondering why people were telling me not to ask why.
Yeah.
And exactly. I couldn't. I'm like, why can't I ask why? You know. And there's so much of that, you know, keep your head down in the military. Keep your head down, and you know, keep your mouth shut and your ears open.
Yeah.
You know.
Fortunately, I was never that guy. I was the big mouth with my head up all the time. So it naturally went into that, but then it really started to play. Like, you know, I have 3 kids, you know, long term. I've made serious investment in the whole idea. Like, I was planning to retire, and then I was going to lose my kids, so I didn't retire. For a lot of reasons, like, philosophically, I was not interested, and pragmatically, I was not interested. It was just that, what am I going to do in lieu of, because I have put so much into this. So, I wasn't going to lose my kids over it. That was really the defining factor. I mean, I'm big enough to admit I was not going to tap out just because of a disagreement. And the world I was in, I was able to talk to a lot of analysts, and I was ruining them. Ruining them to the point where they moved me away from the analysts. They stuck me in the mailroom for the last year because I had way too many people asking way too many questions that could not be answered in that year. That's just the way it was. So,
that's above my pay grade, so to say.
Well, and that's the thing. No, it's not. It's we're talking about the things that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, and we're like, no, this is not something we can do, and this is why, and this is not something. I mean. Or just pointing out contradiction. It's not a popular, like, you know, the Army is all about, they don't like the word no. They don't like the word no. So when you start, you know, interjecting things, you know, I was studying for, I was supposed to get go to Kosovo. Kosovo is actually still a thing in the Army. Like, there's people still in Kosovo 10, 12 years later. And, they're asking me, well, what's wrong with the foreign policy? Like, well, you know, U.S. foreign policy is shit. Here's why. We can't tell that to the commander. Who do you tell them? I'm like, okay, tell them whatever you want. There you go. So when they wanted to know, you know, why are all the drug people are doing? Like, well, because that's economics, and this is how this works. And so I can explain why the drugs are coming across the border from Serbia. And my solution was to leave them alone. They're not attacking you until you decide to go have a firefight with a bunch of heavily armed.
Well, I mean, the military wants to be in firefights because that justifies it existing.
Well, no, they didn't want. The Kosovo mission was real docile. Like, they don't want any of that. But it was just along the lines of, you know, what are we? There's European cops there, and it's just all interfacing. It was Intel. It's lots of talk and not a whole lot of anything. But, you know, you start talking about things that are wholly unpopular, like just leave them alone. They're more trouble than they're worth, and they're doing you a favor by keeping that need met. And it's not all drugs. It's, you know, just contraband. You know what I mean? The black market. That's black markets are a lot bigger.
It's going to exist no matter how totalitarian you create a situation.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but like you know, no matter how many cameras you put up in a retail store, they're not for the shoppers; they're for the employees. You know, your shrink in a store, which is, you know, items stolen, for people that aren't familiar with the term. Most of it comes from your employees, so the cameras are there for you. You know, so if your number one theft in a retail store is your employees, you can think about all the atrocities that are being done by servicemen and women, and, you know, other army guys and other armies across the world. You know, they're just as much of the problem as the bad guys are.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, and in the chicken and the egg idea, you know, really, it's the state that created the black market. You know, prohibition got us mafias. The war on drugs got us cartels. That it's direct correlation. It's, you know, why are you looking for trouble? But then again, these people really are looking for trouble.
Well, yeah,
they like cartels. That allows them to justify all the ramping up of the police state.
The boondoggle.
That's been usurped by the war that never ends. You know, the war on terror. Because when you declare war on emotions, it never ends.
The war on terror, the war on poverty, the war on drugs. They're scheduled till X, when X is when we run out of money. that's what they are. But your last battalion or whatever you were in, just in case anybody ever asked?
I was in 504th on Fort Hood. Actually, if anybody's familiar with Open Carry, Texas, there's a guy... he was on the internet because he got roughed up by cops and they took his rifle and all kinds of stuff.
I think I saw that video.
CJ Grisham, yeah, he was in my unit. So, yeah, we've rubbed some elbows and he's pretty cool. He's still in the transition between Big L and Little L Libertarian. He's coming along just fine. He's good people. I love talking with him. I don't get to talk with him enough now because he retired and I'm gone. And I don't see him like I used to at work. But, yeah,
Is that the one where his son was crying and all that? Okay, yeah, I saw that the other day, man. I was like, you know, everyone, you know, the common sentiment right now is, you know, we need to support our troops and we need to support the police, but they're the ones that are going to be enforcing the law that comes to disarm you. So how far are you going to support them, you know? So that's a scary thought, and I hope it never comes to that, but I have a feeling that word got around that cops were taking guns away from people. There would either be a mass exodus of police officers because they don't want to get killed, or they would call the National Guards in. And
well, I mean, that's what happened in Louisiana during Hurricane Katrina. The National Guard was going door to door confiscating weapons, and now the Louisiana government finally, or the state government, passed a law that says they can't do that. When I thought there was already a law in place in that pesky document called the U.S. Constitution, but we all know that that's only good when they want it to be good. You know, it's only freedom of speech when they want it to be freedom of speech.
Well, you know, the only entity on earth allowed to interpret a constitution of a country or of a state is that state or that government that runs the country. So. They have a monopoly on interpretation. So the Constitution, that's the biggest thing I try to stress to strict constitutionalists, is like, government's supposed to have all these rules, but they determine the rules. So,
well, and part of the problem is they think, people think that the Constitution grants us freedom. It doesn't grant us freedom at all. Freedom is inalienable. I mean, we have these freedoms from our Creator, whether that's if a God, whatever God you believe in, or your parents, or whoever, you know, brought you into this world. The Constitution was put into place to keep government infringement, to keep persecution from the government. I mean, but people don't realize that it's been brainwashed down there. And I mean, the Constitution is not really a noble document. I mean, we shouldn't need a Constitution to be free.
Well, yeah, and then another thing I tell them is, you know, North Korea, Iran, China, every country pretty much on the planet has a constitution. And there's constitutionalists in those countries. But Is there anything else that you just want to add on, Donnie, before we go to Aaron?
I'll just wrap up that if you are in the military and you're looking at us like, look at these crackpots, hey, if you can't have an open enough mind, that's probably your bad. I'll buy the beer. I'll tell you, come over to my house, I will cook you food, I will serve you beer, and I will explain to you why we're all a bunch of idiots. It just doesn't function. I mean, it gives the illusion of function, but it's really not functioning. It's not making the world better. It is making the world worse. You know, empires are a bad thing. The United States is an empire. There's a whole lot of things you kind of have to. You have to go right into heresy. It's not like, oh, the conservatives yell liberal at you and the liberals yell conservative at you. You go right to heretic level.
Oh, yeah. Like I tell them, yeah, I tell is, everybody, you got liberals here, conservatives here. I'm like, I'm in the next galaxy over.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, are you on the left or are you on the right? I'm like, they don't make a scale for me.
I saw a good internet meme that said, being an anarchist or a libertarian or whatever you want to call it is like being the only sober person in a car full of drunk people and they won't let you drive.
Yeah.
For sure. I saw that the other day.
Yeah.
I think I actually shared it on our Facebook.
But, that's probably where I saw it from.
Well, thank you, Donnie, for being so open and telling us a lot about your life. You know, it seems like you kind of had the similar upbringing that I did, born in a Baptist family and strictly conservative. I mean, I was never a liberal. I mean, I live in Alabama, but you know, a lot of people don't realize it, and I never even really thought about it, but the military in this country is a complete socialist, it's like a utopian socialist dream. Like, Karl Marx would probably fucking shit his pants over how the United States Army is set up. And I just really don't know how many servicemen understand that.
There's a pretty open belief that you can't be a purist. You have to compromise your principles with other people because they want something else. And that's how you get things done, is compromise. Well, that's fine, but when you're compromising on, okay, well, today we eat chocolate, tomorrow we eat vanilla, whatever. You know, it's not... But when you're like, well, today we rape and tomorrow we don't, like, ooh, you went off the reservation there, guy.
Yeah. Oh, all right, Aaron, tell us about yourself, you know, about your service in the Army and, you know, being a police officer.
All right, well, starts from my father was a Vietnam veteran in the Army. He got out when I was about 3. So I don't really, I mean, I remember vaguely going up and hugging him when he came in home in his BDUs. My mom worked for the government. My brother is still in the Coast Guard. My other brother was Army, and my sister works for the government. So I come from a long line of government workers. I actually had no desire. I always wanted to be a police officer since I was in the first grade. And I never had any desire to join the Army. I was sitting in a computer science class of all things in my senior year of high school, and we had a Army National Guard recruiter come and talk to us. And he went around the class, and he came to me, and he goes, so what do you want to do? And I said, I want to be a police officer. He goes, well, you can't do that without military experience. So I was like, oh, really? You know, and I really didn't have – I mean, I was thinking about going to college, but if I could be a cop without going to college, I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. So it took me to take my ASVAB. I scored pretty well on it, almost the highest. I think I didn't qualify for military intelligence or medic, which are the highest GT scores, but everything else. And he goes, man, you should be an MP, military police. I was like, dude, I'm 17 years old. I get to arrest people at the age of 17. This is outstanding, because in Virginia, you got to be 21 to be a cop. In most places, you have to be 21 to be a cop, with a few exceptions. And so I'm like, yeah, you know. So he takes me in the National Guard. The way it works is they take you to your unit first before you ship off to basic training. And I had already signed the contract for 6 years. So he takes me to the unit. I know, 6 years, right? They get you on these long contracts because they don't want you to back out of it after a year, you know, because you realize that a lot of it's bullshit. So we get there, and he goes, you won't see the police cars. They keep them in the back. I'm like, all right, cool. He drops me off. I go in. I'm all excited. I'm like, cool. I get to see, you know. And they're like, yeah, we don't do that anymore. They had contracted all the law enforcement out to DOD. And MP is pretty much in a, I don't want to step on anybody that's 11 Bravo infantry. They're pretty much mobile infantry now. You know, they ride around in a Humvee. I was a 50 cal gunner. That was my job. I didn't arrest one person. in my career as an MP. And that was that. Then 20 years old, I had an opportunity to apply with the local police department and got hired at the age of 20. And it was one of the top-notch police departments in the state, if not the country, Henrico Police Department. They're just top-notch because, they're paramilitary, well-trained. They got all the money in the county, and they're nationally accredited, state accredited. Did that. I was still in the National Guard at the time. Went to the police academy and became a police officer. And then 2 years on the road, or a year on the road, I believe it was, I got orders to go to Iraq. I volunteered to go to Iraq because if I didn't, I was going to be stop lost. In my other unit, I wanted to get out. I mean, after 6 years, I was ready to get out. So they were like, hey, we're looking for some volunteers to go with this unit. If you don't go, you're going to be stop lost, which the government's the only one that I know that can keep you into a contract, even though your contract's expired. So I volunteered to go. It was a pretty good unit. My job was a 50 cal gunner. That was my position. Our job over there was to train the Iraqi police, which was, to me, one of the most dangerous jobs over there because they're the ones that always turn on you. Then we did some convoy security, and then basically we looked for trouble. You know, if someone rocketed us, we went out there and did force recon trying to find them. We also did some RTT, stuff like that. So quick response, quick reaction force, QRF, stuff like that. So that was that. My contract was up while I was overseas, and they dangled $12,000 tax-free in front of me, so I re-enlisted for six more years. Then I was I know. I mean, $12,000. I mean, like, all right, cool, you know. May 4th, 2009, which was about halfway through my tour, I got hit with an IED. To me, it was pretty minor. It could have been a lot worse. I mean, the guys that, you know, they got wounded pretty bad. I just had like a concussion pretty much. But it racked my brain a little bit. I'm a different person because of it. I don't have too many physical side effects. When I got back, they pretty much medically retired me. I went back to the police department, got back on the road. I noticed I had a little bit of every time I'd hear like a loud noise or something like that, I was a little jumpy.
Can imagine so.
Yeah, I mean, like the first day I got back, I had to ride with someone for like a week or two to train back up to make sure, you know. I still remember the thing. He slammed the trunk, man, the first day, and I like, you know, jumped. Throughout the rest of the time there, I was 10 years in the Army, so I joined in 2003, got out in 2013 officially. The police department, I joined in 2006 and got out, did 6 years, so got out in 2012. Had some discrepancies with the police department, and they pretty much cut me loose because I was a liability issue, which I don't blame them. I mean, whatever.
Weren't dishonorably kicked out of the police department or anything?
No. Okay. I mean, I was in internal affairs for a couple different things that were non-oppressive towards other people. It was just paperwork errors, stuff like that. Basically, we came to a mutual agreement that, yeah, it's time for me to get out of there. I mean, I was a completely different person from going out when I got back from overseas. I just wasn't, my head wasn't there. That was pretty much it. I also come from a conservative background. I was a Republican when I joined the military. When I got back from Iraq, I was a Tea Party conservative. That lasted about a week. Then I became a libertarian and recently became an anarcho-capitalist because I wanted to take the step forward.
It didn't take long for the transition for you to become like... Well, a lot of people don't understand. Like, if you're a libertarian... and you still believe in government, you're not a libertarian.
Well, I would say libertarians believe in a very limited government. I mean,
that's not really true because let me explain it to you, okay? The people who made the Libertarian Party, all right, and this is where the idea of libertarianism or whatever was around for about 20 years before Libertarian Party. The reason they created the Libertarian Party was to get people to hear the idea. It was never to win one House seat, never to win a presidency.
And it turned into that. Okay, so if you want to talk about, I guess we can go back to the classic liberal, classic libertarian thing. So, yeah, I mean...
Most libertarians that you're going to meet are going to be constitutionalists, and that's not a libertarian. You can't believe that there's a document that has a higher claim on your life than you do.
right,
as a libertarian, because you're against all forms of aggression, and a document that, you know, robs you of your consent to even agree to it goes against almost every, it goes against, actually not almost, it goes against every libertarian principle.
Right.
Big L versus little L, ideology versus methodology.
Yeah, the word, I still call myself a libertarian to people, not to freak them out when I say like anarcho-capitalist or I'm an abolitionist or whatnot. You know, it depends on what circle I'm in. But I still say libertarian, but I'm more of one of those like strict libertarians.
Yeah, as soon as you say anarchist, people just stop listening because they don't know what it is. They think Mad Max, you know, it's a bunch of bullshit. Other than that, I mean, I was in the at the end of my tour, I was attached to the 8th MP Brigade, 25th ID. We did some Cav Scout missions with them, and then Triple Nickel Engineering Battalion. We did some convoy security for them. So that's me in a nutshell. Got back, and pretty much they're not hiring 50 cal gunners. So I don't have any skills to offer people, I guess. So started my own business building computers.
Well, the reason I got you guys to say what battalion you're in and whatnot is because any military person that's going to be listening to this is going to fucking call bullshit if you guys don't. You know, because that's the first thing they're going to want to know is where were you in? What were you in? You know, because you can obviously tell when someone's bullshitting about that.
Oh, okay, so, I get it all the time. It's yeah. Whatever.
So, yeah, no, I just... You know, let's throw it all out there because you're going to get questions. You're going to get hate on this. We know this. If the right ears hear this, you're going to be called the treason, or especially you, Aaron, you're going to be called a blue line stepper or whatever. They're going to say you're breaking the code of silence and stuff, and you're going to get hate, and Donnie, you're going to get hate. So you have to be prepared for these things, and the best thing to do is just lay it out there to where, you know, when the whole world, when you're open to criticism and the whole world knows your shit, you know, they can't criticize it because there's nothing to criticize.
Well, I mean, I still have cop friends, you know, that I was on the, I mean, one of my good friends, my friend Josh, he's still a cop, and we actually had a conversation the other day about, you know, my ideologies and his, and cops are still going to be biased towards cops, but in the same aspect, people are going to be biased on the other situation. What I like to do is I like to take a step back, take police out of the equation, and look at it objectively, because, I mean, a human being still has a right to defend themselves. I don't care what it is. You know, if someone pulls a gun out on me, a cop or not, I'm shooting you, you know? But that's just me. A lot of my police friends are starting to become more open to things, but they still think drugs should be illegal and all this stuff, you know. So hopefully this podcast will also bring over people that are servicemen and women or police officers, retired police officers and whatnot, to our side of the argument, and they can see what freedom's all about.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point of this show and every show I do, is to not run in with a baseball bat and try to hit people over the head with this ideal. It's to say, have you thought about this? I personally am a much happier person when I pulled myself out of the status paradigm, when I felt like I had control over this thing, or could even attempt to change this thing, and realizing that I can't. And even if I could, it would never change anything.
And we're not forcing anybody to agree with us. I mean, that's the main thing. We're not forcing you to think like we're thinking. I'm not holding a gun at you, forcing you to give me money to do anything, you know?
Yeah. So the big question I guess you're going to first get if the right ears hear this podcast, and I really hope they do, the first question you're going to get is probably going to be a sophistry-laden thing of, well, you can leave if you don't like it, or you guys are just brainwashed, or you I know, trust me, or you guys don't have your morals in right, or, you know, the Constitution is just. You're going to get all these arguments that we personally have all heard 1,000 times, but this is going to be new to people hearing this. So why don't you guys just go quickly over what really just made you start thinking about all this stuff? Like, what turned the key in the lock? You know what I'm saying?
You want me to go first, I guess?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure.
Honestly, for me, you know, I went to right after Obamacare was passed, I really got involved in politics. Before then, I just voted Republican because they had an R next to their name. You know, that's what I grew up. And then Obamacare came out, or the Affordable Health Care Act for you PC people, but I don't give a shit about PC, so I'm going to call it fucking Obamacare. I thought, well, wait a minute. They're forcing me to buy something because I'm living, and it's against the law for me to kill myself. So therefore, this is, you know, extortion. You're forcing me to buy something just for the sake of living. So I went to a couple Tea Party rallies, and I was like, all right, this is cool. But they were just way too religious for me. And I myself am an atheist, and I'm not one of those militant atheists. I don't care what you believe in, as long as you don't force your ideals on me. So honestly, I think what made me step over the line was this whole gay marriage thing. I have some gay friends, you know, and I think they should be. You shouldn't have to have a document saying they can't be together. I mean, technically, I'm in a domestic partnership right now because I live with my girlfriend. I mean, if I can get rights under that, then, you know, people have the right to do what they want. So honestly, I think the whole gay marriage debate is what started it for me, and then it was a big rabbit hole down from there, talking to my buddy Cal, who runs a different anarchist organization here in Richmond, Virginia. You know, I that man, he can make you feel like, he can make you realize you're dumb without calling you dumb. Yes. He didn't belittle me at all. You know, I'm still in a veterans motorcycle club, so I wear that. I mean, people know I was a veteran, and he came and talked to me about it. He's a vet himself, and we had some long talks, and I said, you know what, you're right, man. And the hardest thing it ever took for me to admit was that I thought the Iraq War was wrong because I was involved in it, you know. It took me a hard time to realize that a lot of the laws are immoral and unjust because I had to enforce them. So basically, I had to realize that I oppressed people. I mean, it's hard for me to admit.
It's hard to face that, you know. It's hard to look in the mirror and face those demons. It's almost right. Like you just want to bury it in the back of your head and never really think about it.
But and luckily, I guess I lack compassion. I mean, people keep saying you should run for office or whatever. And if I don't have compassion, I really don't. I don't have empathy. I don't have sympathy. I don't know if that was the military did that or I just don't care. So in that aspect, I looked at it and I said, you know what? A lot of the things I did was wrong. A lot of the things people are doing now is wrong. And people try to justify it. I mean, the biggest argument on the whole gay marriage thing I get is, well, once we allow that, then a man can marry two women. Well, if they want to be miserable and marry two women, let them be miserable and marry two women. One's enough for me, but it doesn't affect you.
Well,
it doesn't affect you at all.
My biggest thing on the whole gay marriage, and I'm hoping we don't go on a big gay marriage tangent,
well,
is,
I was just saying that's how it brought me.
No. I really enjoy your introspective on that, because you're saying just a small issue, just essentially a molehill, you know, you got on the other side of that and realized, holy shit, I'm on the edge of a cliff.
Right.
You know, and you know, it's just that one little thing, you know. It's like you know, if you were looking out into the sea and you were only looking through this little hole, and then you did this, you'd be like, holy shit, you know.
Oh yeah. Well, so. And I'm not even, you know, I'm not. It doesn't even affect me. I'm not gay. But it's like saying, that, what if someone said I couldn't marry a woman? I mean, I'd freak out. I'm like, you can't tell me what the hell I can and can't do, especially when it doesn't affect you. There's no victim in the equation. Like, you can't show me a victim, and society can't be a victim. And to get back on the whole moral issue, who's morals? Everybody has different morals. I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody can agree that if I don't affect you violently or physically, you know, then there is no victim. I can call you a hairy nice guy, and because you have a beard on your chin, you know, I can throw insults at you in anyways, and all it does is hurt your pride. There is no physical harm. So it drove me crazy, and I had to break the chains.
Yeah, I always that's a big issue, you know, that I have with my father about this thing. I'm not gay either, but he is one of those, you know, he'll sit there and thump the Bible till he's blue in the face about this thing, and saying, you know, if we break down our Christian morals, then this whole country is going to go to hell. And I'm like, Dad, the whole country's already gone to hell.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, my dad was the same way, and I think people are starting to see the light. He went on my parents cruise all the time. In fact, right now they're in the Mediterranean cruising. They went on a cruise, and they sat next to a gay couple, and he came back, and he goes, you know what, Aaron? they weren't bad at all. I said, yeah, it's not like you caught on fire for talking to them. You know, we're not a religious family. I mean,
they're people.
We celebrate Christmas, but we never went to church or anything like that. And I was like, yeah, Dad, it doesn't affect you, does it? He goes, nah, they were like the nicest people ever. I was like, you're starting to see the light. Now, if I could just start to get you to think like a anarcho-capitalist, will be good. But he'll be.
I've dropped anarcho-capitalist pretty much from my vocabulary. Yeah. I pretty much only call myself a voluntarist because no one's heard that. Common folk haven't heard that word, and then when they start hearing it, they're like, wow, this sounds great.
Well, they changed the meaning of capitalist, so...
Well, I mean, I'm not... over everything, I am a capitalist.
Right, yeah.
I believe that every interaction should be voluntary, just like capitalism.
Not corporatism. So,
not corporatism. A lot of people don't understand that, and that's one of the biggest fights of my life that I'll probably continue to fight till I'm dead, is how bad people are taught that American capitalism isn't fascism, and they don't understand that planned capitalism, state intervention in the marketplace is fascism. They don't understand that, and they never will. But, the whole marriage thing, marriage doesn't exist outside of religion. It also doesn't exist outside of government. So I'm not a big fan of marriage. I don't look down on anybody that gets married. But as far as getting the state involved, I mean, if you want to have a contract with another person, I'll be with you forever. You can have my stuff. I can have half your stuff. You both voluntarily sign it. I'm okay with that. If you want to call that marriage, I'm down with that. But as far as getting the state involved or getting a religious entity involved, I'm not for that at all and never will be.
Unless you are religious and you want that religious.
Yeah, and then go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly, if I ever get married to my girlfriend now, we'll probably have a Christian wedding because she's a Christian. And it doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect me at all. And the last thing I'll say, I mean, my dad's coming a long way, like I just said. I mean, before I deployed to Iraq, I remember he had a picture of George Bush hanging up on the refrigerator, George and Laura. And as soon as I got deployed, he ripped that thing off the wall and just tore it up and burned it. He was so pissed off, you know. So I think we're getting to people.
Well, Donnie, what was that little bitty thing that the, you know, the first step, so to say?
The seed.
Oh.
The seed of liberty.
I met the Iraqis.
What now?
I met the Iraqis. I went to Iraq and I met them. A bunch of douchebags just like us. They don't give a shit what I'm doing on Wednesday night, Sunday morning, Friday night. They don't care who I'm screwing. They don't care who I pray to. They're looking for a decent job. They like, they like our clothes. They like our music. They like our TV shows. They're just people. That's it. So all of a sudden, these big demonized, oh, they're a bunch of Allah Akbar. No, they're not. The vast majority of them give a shit less about Allah than most of the Americans do about Christ.
Hell, they drink and do all that kind of stuff, you know?
Shit. Now, they might have to keep it underground, but that's really because they're surrounded by lunatics in the same way that Americans were surrounded by lunatics during Prohibition, you know? So, sitting around pretending that we're all that different and...
There's a common mistake with people, and I'll just use terms that other people can understand. There's a common mistake with people in the first world, the Western powers, so to say, that think that the rest of the world works at the same pace sociologically as they do. And they see China with sweatshops. They see Bangladesh, you know, a hellhole. They see that and they go, well, they should be like us. They should have the freedoms we have. Their culture is not ready for that. Iraq is not ready to be Americanitized or Englandized or whatever you want to call it.
That's vastly an economic issue. The reason that, I mean, our great-grandparents worked for 12 cents, 25 cents an hour in a goddamn sweatshop. And after massive amounts of capital investment here, those jobs are gone. But now those people are living, even though they got cell phones, they're still living about 100 years behind in the actual infrastructures that create the wealth. And so they have to work in sweatshops. And people, there's a video floating around where they put a bunch of 2 euro t-shirts, and you put your 2 euro piece, it was somewhere in Europe,
Yeah, yeah.
and you have to watch this video about how these t-shirts in the machine were made in this sweatshop for, by people who are only making like 20 cents an hour. And then people like, and at the end of the video, it's like, do you still want to buy a t-shirt? And if you click no, it gives you your money back. And I'm like,
clicking buy right away. Blam.
Right.
It's a cheap t-shirt.
Well, yeah, but the people don't understand that if you don't buy any of those t-shirts, those people are going to be out of work. And they're working for 20 cents an hour because the next best job they can get is only 12 cents an hour. Like, it's not that you hate them. It's not that you're exploiting them. It's that there are levels. There, you know, it's a lot. Economics is kind of a ladder that gets...
As long as it's not made through communist ways, like no one's coming to their house in the morning with a gun and saying, hey, come on, you're going to the sweatshop today to knit for 14 hours. If they're voluntarily going to that sweatshop and working...
Yeah, it's
voluntary. There's no gun to their head. Someone's actually giving them an opportunity.
Right.
And the sweatshop the sweatshop owner is getting, he's probably getting shook down too. He's probably not getting what they're selling the shirts for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's just trickle up economics, so to say. And you're not going to have this utopian socialist paradise that we have in America right now where you can sit on your ass and make $30,000 worth of $30,000 a year.
How's about the obvious contradiction that you just bought a bunch of sweatshop t-shirts to try and tell people not to buy sweatshop t-shirts?
Yeah.
Yeah, but, to stock the machine. Like, oh my God, you exploited those people. Like,
what? And Dave, I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there with it's voluntary. People in America especially think that jobs are either forced upon them or entitlements, and they want to say the employer is evil for only paying them $7 an hour, $8 an hour. When I look at it as, hey, this employer is giving you an opportunity to make money. They don't need you. They'll be able to find some. I mean, there's more jobs than there are people. They're going to be able to find you.
It's like the whole scab thing, you know, like when a union strikes and then everybody's like, I'll work for $10 less.
Exactly, but they and unfortunately, they under the government rules and the union rules, they can't hire anybody else. I mean,
well, luckily, all right, so like, luckily, right-to-work states are kind of smashing that shit.
Yeah, I mean, Virginia's a right-to-work state. I mean, and I agree. If you're an employer, you should be able to fire anybody for any reason you want. Even if you don't like their hair, if you don't like what they look or what they say, I mean, you're the employer. You're paying the bills. The government ain't paying the bills, sweetheart. You know?
No, yeah, and it's I know I wear that word out a lot, but it's fascist. It's fascistic in nature for the government to have any intervention in the marketplace. So the 40-hour work week, the overtime pay, the et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, maternity leave, all this. The businesses that can afford to do that are going to attract the better employees. See, a lot of people think that you create different classes of people when a job over here is offering something that a job over here can't. And that's kind of just how statists, especially liberals in the communist side of the statist paradigm, that's how they fit things into their narrative to create that controversy, to split people, to divide them. So if you're working somewhere voluntarily and you can say, well, if I don't work here, I'm going to starve, that's bullshit. You know, there was a lady on the... I saw a lady the other day was making 12 grand a month by walking around the beach making margaritas for people.
In a lot of states, you can't even do that because the law says you can.
Well, exactly, but still, like, there's jobs out there. And if you got rid of the unions, if you got rid of a lot of the government intervention into the marketplace in America, all these jobs that we're losing would come rushing back. If there was no corporate taxes here, Apple would have all of their factories here.
It's just, it's more economical.
Yeah. Like, no matter, like, this is one of my favorite quotes that I guess I came up with. I've never seen it anywhere else. But no matter how hard any kind of economic structure wants to try to control anything, supply and demand will always triumph. A lot of people don't ever really realize that.
A lot of these ideas, a lot of these ideas are fully rooted in ignorance. The three subjects that I'm looking, you know, at all of the things that you could possibly study that make somebody, you know, that kind of person, when you look at them, they're like, oh, yeah, they're pretty smart, they're consistent, they have an ability to process information. It's economics, philosophy, and logic. And they're the three things. I mean, you can look at anything else. Those are the three things that are electives. Nobody has these as a part of their core course curriculum. They're always elected because maybe you might want to go do them. Like, these are things that 10-year-olds should learn, because it's kind of like it's an intelligence vaccine, really, or a stupid vaccine, however you want to look at it, where when you learn these things at a younger age, you can't bullshit somebody when they suddenly get to their first year in high school and somebody starts slipping the marks in their tea and they don't realize it. You know what I mean? And all of these ideas are ignorant. You were talking about unions. The unions in Africa were very open that they were trying to keep black workers out of the market, and that's why the union did what they did. The unions here operated in the exact same manner, but they just weren't as honest about it. They keep trying to tell you that they're trying to protect the little guy. Oh, you should want the little guy.
I mean, I got into a big argument with a guy. He worked at I guess the Mercedes plant or the Hyundai plant here in Alabama, and he had gotten fired. And I asked him what he did. You know, I told him, I said, that's what you get for working a union job. There's a lot of stuff I'm leaving out here, but let's move on before I go on a rant about unions, because I could talk about it for hours. We're going to go over some quick little articles of the week, I guess, for this show. By the time this comes out, they'll probably be out of the 24-hour news cycle, but there's nothing we can do to prevent this. We're just going to help give our perspective on it. But first up, whoever wants to grab it first, is this whole ISIS attack in Texas, that which I just think I read somewhere is being proven to be a hoax. It wasn't actually ISIS.
Oh, you mean the two people that shot the lady, or shot at the lady? Or
yeah, I guess so. I haven't really read much into it. I stay away from mainstream media so much. I happen to see the headline.
I mean, go ahead, Donnie.
I hate conspiracy theory. I hate the idea of the false flag. I understand it happens, but one guy with a pistol shoots two guys with semi-automatic rifles. Something is not. That's
so the officer or whatever shot two guys with rifles?
Two guys with semi-automatic rifles, and this guy ponies up. Like, he's either the bravest human, the dumbest human.
It could have been Chuck Norris. I mean, it was in Texas.
Texas Ranger.
Yeah.
It could have been Chuck Norris. It would have been a bigger headline.
It would have been Walker, though. It wouldn't have been Chuck Norris. It would have been Walker form.
Yeah, you're right. Cowboy hat, beard, trench coat. Yeah.
I mean, they are ISIS, though, apparently. So, I mean, it's realistic that they could. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, shootings happen every day. You know? I mean, this just could have been just some fanatics that honestly didn't like what she was doing.
How else is the media going to whip everybody up into a frenzy to, you know, maybe get a few more people to enlist?
It's ridiculous. Just say it was. I mean, how do you know they were ISIS? I mean, were they wearing like ISIS T-shirts with ISIS hats? You know, you don't know, because right. Were they? I mean, they may have been Middle Eastern. I haven't really been paying attention to it, honestly. But I mean, people kill people every day, and does not automatically think they're ISIS. I mean, if I go out and shoot someone, doesn't mean I'm a white supremacist.
Yeah, I mean,
people don't even know what ISIS is. It's a division of light infantry. They have trucks and a couple of weapons. And
isn't it on that TV show Archer? Isn't that what ISIS is?
Yeah,
that's what happened.
ISIS
was on the Mexican border, they'd all be dead before they got to San Antonio. Like, this is a boring talk. I don't know why people think about
it. They wouldn't even make it across the border. What are you talking about? There's only 8,000 ISIS members on record.
No, more.
Okay, even if there's more, one Apache helicopter.
But still, the argument's the same. Like I said, they're all dead before they get to San Antonio. They're running around in pickup trucks with AKs, and it's like, oh my god, it's ISIS.
That's
like,
if they had the equipment to move all of their stuff here.
That's your militia groups.
And they have enough troubles in their own neck of the woods to even worry about coming over here.
Well, the two largest the top three terrorist groups on the United States government watch list is
Congress.
The Patriot groups, the 3%ers, etc., etc. Then it's ISIS, because I guess that's the new boogeyman, and then the other one is the sovereign citizens. And majoritively, because almost all of these guys that are in these Patriot groups are claim to be sovereign citizens, are ex-military. So they're not only is the government funding and creating their own boogeymen abroad, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, etc., etc., but the government's also creating and funding and training their own problems at home.
That's a really good point.
And
good point.
I'm going to have a hard time believing that U.S. Army men and U.S. Army, you know, our Marines, etc., etc., are going to fire upon other Americans if the other Americans' cause is just. I mean, there's only so much now because everyone's got a cell phone that you can hide from your infantries, your guys, because, you know, if his brother's in a Patriot group and he calls him and says, hey, look, man, we're just trying to do this, you know, that's going to spread around camp or the base like wildfire, and it's not going to work like I guess the government's hoping it's going to work out.
People don't understand. There's a lot of constitutionalists, a lot of minarchists, a lot of libertarian, big L libertarian, stuff like that in the military. So while you're thinking, oh, these are just a bunch of jackrooted thugs, I got news for you. A lot of them aren't very far off the anarchists. Yes, I understand. It's a very large elite. I get that. But we're not talking about, you know, diehard Marxists everywhere. Like, you'd be lucky to find a Marxist in the military. Best of luck to you. So these people are very far along the road, probably farther along the road than most college students. I mean, that's
really Marxists,
you know what I mean?
Oh god, so, people that are so sheltered.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, a lot of people like to say, "Oh, you know, we don't want nothing to do with cops and military." I'm telling you, those are the ones you need to spread the good word to because they're not so far off. If you approach them decently, you treat them decently, the smarter ones who are willing to break rank, you know, at least in the conversational sense.
I mean, my best friend is a cop, and me and him have conversations all the time. And, you know, he's basically kind of just basically what – and if he hears this, you know, I'm not lying. He's basically just said, you believe what you believe. I believe what I believe. I believe he's pretty much a conservative. But I think if something came down that he didn't agree with, he wouldn't do it. You know, I don't want to – maybe at some point in time we can have him on this show.
That'd be awesome, man. I mean, when I was a cop, if I went to like a robbery call, like someone was robbed, the first question I ask is, why don't you have a gun? I mean, they were like, well, we have the police. I was like, honey, it takes me 10 minutes to get here at least. I mean, there's only, you know,
I just want to get here and bag and tag them.
Yeah, I mean, do my job for me. But no, I mean, a lot of cops are like, you know, they'd go up and see someone on the road walking with a gun on their hip, and they'd go up and question them. When a police officer gets a call, they have to investigate. So I'd go up and be like, hey, man, how you doing? Good. Oh, you just walking around? Nice to see you. I wouldn't even ask for their ID because I didn't have a right to ask for their ID, and I understood this. And a lot of cops didn't. They'd be like, well, let me see your ID, and let me check to see if the gun's stolen. Well, if they don't want to do that, then they don't have to. And people would argue the point. I'd be like, dude, he doesn't have to show you his gun. He's not committing a crime. It's not against the law in the state of Virginia to walk around with a gun on your hip.
No. And I think a lot of it is a power play. You're questioning their authority. And, you know, it just depends on what cop you get. You know, I've been pulled over twice in the last 2.5 years, maybe. I don't talk to police officers when I get pulled over. And I've gotten a ticket one time. The guy called me an asshole, et cetera, et cetera. I was compliant, walked up. He asked I asked him two questions. Why did I get pulled over? What's the emergency? Why did I get pulled over? He said you were speeding and showed me the radar gun. And at that point, I just handed him my shit. Didn't talk to him. He wanted me to tell him how fast I was going or agree with him. I didn't do any of that. And then I went into court and told him, I said, I wasn't speeding. The cop didn't show up, got it written off. Because they have to be there.
See, if I get pulled over, I mean, I'll talk to them, you know, but if they ask any questions that will self-incriminate me, I won't answer them. But I'm like, hey, you know, how you doing? Why'd you stop me? I always ask them that. I'm like, why did you stop me? And if they're like, oh, your taillight's out, I'm like, oh, well, can you show me? You know, I'm polite with them. There's no reason for me to be an asshole to them. I mean, unless they're an asshole to me, I don't care.
Well, you're an ex-cop, so you know how to speak the language.
Well, yeah, I can. If anybody's watching this, the best advice I can give you is just be polite, you know, because sadly, if the cop's having a bad day, he can write you a ticket for that, and it's a sad world we live in. But don't. The first thing I do is I have my license and registration ready because I'm going to have to show it to them. I don't care what you're doing. As soon as they get there, I'm like, hey, how you doing? You know, what's wrong? And then they, you know, oh, your taillight's out. Well, hey, can you show me? Is it something I can fix on the side of the road? You know, I'm polite until they're an asshole to me. And I've only had one case since not being a cop where I had to challenge a guy. He was going to try to arrest me for trespassing at my buddy's apartment complex, and I was like, my buddy's right there. I'm with him at that point. And I stood up to him, and he told me, well, I need to be quiet. And I said, well, I don't need to be quiet. I can talk as much as I want. It's my goddamn right. And he could. There was nothing at that point he could do.
He could have slammed your face up against the wall and said you were obstructing an investigation.
Not with all the witnesses I had, but you're right. I mean, my buddy of mine got arrested for obstruction of justice because he was filming. I mean, and they said he was drunk, and then he got it dismissed in court. But I treat cops like I treat every other human being, unless they give me a reason not to. I mean, I'm not going to be, if I get pulled over, if I legitimately, you know, if they make up some excuse, and I mean, I'm pretty well versed in the law. I mean, I had to go to the police academy. That's an 8-month course. I'm pretty much familiar with Virginia law. I know whether or not I'm breaking a law or not, and you know, I don't give cops shit. I mean, there's no reason to, unless they give me shit, or I see them giving someone else shit that I think's out of the ordinary.
Yeah, you know, the other time I got pulled over, I came to the door or the window, said, "How you doing this evening?" And I didn't say one. I literally didn't say one word. I just wanted to try it out. "So you're not going to answer any of my questions?" And I just looked at him like this the whole time, and he said, "All right, have a good day." Because I guess he was wanting me to say, you know, I don't know how fast I was going and stuff. Like that.
Well, never incriminate or criminal. You know the word I'm trying to use.
A lot of
never
people incriminate yourself. Yeah, yeah, a lot of people don't understand that. I had a question. You know, when you're thinking about leaving the military, and you know, if I'm talking to someone and trying to tell them, hey, you need to get out of the military, man. What you're doing is not just or right or moral, et cetera, et cetera. At the end of the day, where the rubber meets the road, they're going to say, well, I got to feed my family. And that is a valid point. And if you can sleep at night knowing what you're doing is bad, then I guess you're just a bad person. But I you know, it's where that rubber meets the road. And I know Donnie could probably talk a little bit more about this than you can, Aaron, because you got discharged on a medical. So it wasn't like you had a choice in the matter of staying in or staying out.
Now, I will say that, I mean, when you say that to someone that they're doing something wrong, I for one would do anything to feed my family. I mean, if the only way I can do it is by immoral means at that point, and I'm already there, I mean, my family comes first before anybody else. So that's an argument you're going to get. But yeah, you're right. Donnie can definitely take the...
Well, self-preservation is always in the mind, but you can...
Right.
There's always a way to do things voluntary.
Right.
There's always a peaceful way to handle a situation. It's like, if your family's starving, you could always go, would anybody let me work for them? I'll paint your house. I'll do the, you know, like there's always a way to find work.
Correct.
Or barter for food. No.
Dealing with aggressive lunatics, you can't talk certain people down. It just is what it is.
Well, if so, someone's being aggressive to you, then you have all the right in the world to defend yourself.
Right. It's not always the case. If you're willing to say no, a lot of guys in the military can probably understand this, 17 years active duty, 2, 3, 4 times a year during either equal opportunity, all kinds of different training, you'll be told you don't ever have to follow an unlawful order. Anybody ever get an actual definition of what an unlawful order is once? Anybody once? I challenge. I would love to. Maybe some guy in the JAG Corps, maybe some lawyer. That's it. So you're always told you don't have to follow an unlawful order, but you're never told what one constitutes.
That is true. Yeah, I don't ever remember hearing what an unlawful order was.
So if you're willing, and a lot of guys are very yes man. They kind of get into that system, that mentality that they have to do what they're told. They don't think about it, and you know that could be a real problem.
Well, chain of command is beat into them. Yeah,
if you're in the military right now, and you know that when something goes sideways, you're going to go, nope, not a fucking chance. No, sir, that is not going to happen. No, top, I ain't doing that. If you're that guy, and you'll put your ass out there like that, I don't necessarily see a problem with, you know, I wouldn't deploy. I mean, there comes a point where you have to say no. You know, this is outside of the wheelhouse, and you have to be able to say no. But I was fortunate. I came back from Iraq in 2011, and most of this has happened since then. You know, I probably wasn't an anarchist until late 2013. So I've been stateside. I don't have these life and death moral dilemmas on a day-to-day basis. Like, the worst thing that happens is, hey, you have to spend all your money in your unit, you know, because it's the end of the fiscal year, and you have to go waste taxpayer dollars. Like, it's a terrible system. That's the way it's set up. I bitch a lot, you know, every step.
It doesn't have a profit margin that it has to keep.
Right. It has no rules it has to go by except the ones that it created for itself artificially. It is the most backwards thing you've ever seen. So if you're in the military, you know you're not going to deploy, and you know you're not going to re-enlist. You're doing nobody any good by shitting on the commander's desk and making some blaze of glory moral outrage on the way out the door, because everything you've been telling all those people around you for the last however many years, I was there for 3 whole years, you know, you're just going to destroy all that credibility with all these people who, they were looking to you. They would look to you for professional advice. They would look to you for personal advice. They would look to you for these abstract concept advice, like, hey, you know, you seem to have your shit together. What do you think about, you know, libertarianism? Oh, and you can sit down and have a decent talk with these people. You know, I had people approach me about Ron Paul. Like, what do you think about Ron Paul?
I tell people that all the time. If someone's asking you about libertarianism, as a voluntarist, pretend to be a libertarian for a second. Just,
I am a libertarian.
Just
in
push.
Method. In method.
Just push. Hey, there's the water over there.
Authoritarian and libertarian are methods. Libertarian, big L, is a party. It's an ideology. But libertarian methodology is that of an anarchist. It is the one of the method of liberty. So,
well,
I am a libertarian in the small L methodological.
Well, and back to the military. I mean, the military is the only job that I know. Whereas, if you do something wrong, then they legitimately hand it to you. I mean, if you do something terribly wrong, you get a dishonorable discharge, and that affects your civilian career. You're good luck getting a job anywhere with a dishonorable discharge. On top of that, if you do something wrong and you get an Article 15, they can dock your pay, and that's all fine and dandy. But they make you work while your pay is docked. So basically, if you get 2 months dock pay, you're not getting paid for 2 months, and you still have to work. I don't know any job where if you get suspended from your job without pay, that they make you work.
Yeah,
so they dangle that over you, and it keeps you in line. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't. And if you want to get out of your contract, you can't get out of your contract, or you're AWOL. So if you have these young men and women that are joining the military and they realize that they're doing something immoral or wrong, the government's got them by the balls. I mean, there's nothing they can do about it without fucking up their own life. So, I mean, you can't just be like, oh, well, this guy, and I'm talking to non-military people out there that are just like, oh, well, these people are doing immoral stuff. Well, the government's unfortunately got them by the balls. They have no choice to do this until their contract's up, or they're screwed. They are literally screwed.
Well, yeah, but to add to this, I mean, I'm going to quote Rosa Parks. If you don't have a line in the sand, you're a slave. If there's not a line that you set that no other man is going to cross, no one's going to tell you what to do at that point, then you're a slave.
Right, there's no arguing that, yeah.
So, you know, a lot of scary questions follow that train of thought. You know, when would I kill a CEO? When would I do this? When would I completely just go AWOL, et cetera, et cetera? You have to have a line in the sand, guys. You have to have that line. You have to say, I won't do that. And I don't care what the fuck happens to me after that.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Donnie may say, I mean, anybody I serve with, I can tell you now, they wouldn't fire one. People that are unarmed. I mean, hell, we had kids throw us rocks all the time, and nobody even thought about shooting them. Actually, I think one guy did think about shooting him. He was like, well, I would have been justified. I was like, no, you wouldn't have, dude. I would have fucking fried you if you shot that kid for throwing a rock at you. You know?
Yeah. And it's almost like, you know, the way police officers is like, oh, you scratched the royal
Oh, God.
The royal gown. Like, if you walk up to a cop and just, like, pat him on the shoulder, they fucking form tackle you and put you in cuffs and say that you assaulted him.
And it's the same. I mean, I used to bounce at a bar not too long ago, and people, like, I had to talk to the guys, and they were prior military, prior in law enforcement. Like, if someone did something wrong, they would just come up behind them and tackle them. Not even say, hey, you know, pat him on the shoulder. And it could be something simple as they were being mean to the bartender. They would just come up and attack. I said, look, you do that to me, I'm going to fuck you up. I don't know who you are by coming up behind me and just tackling me. Let me know you're there and let me
know
what the
problem is. It's like these no-knock raids, you know?
Exactly.
If you're dealing drugs, large quantity of drugs, and there's a huge military-esque operation that happens in the middle of the night on you, you're firing back because you don't know that that's police.
Well, and a lot of...
That could even be a rival gang claiming to be the police.
And a lot of the counties in my area are going, you can't do no knock raids. You have to knock and announce yourself before you enter. But I mean, I can go up to a door and say police, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, I always look for a badge, and a lot of people go to the point of, I mean, you can buy a costume at the costume store. I ask for ID. I mean, when I had a run in with the Richmond City cop that wanted to arrest me for trespassing, he was in plain clothes. I said, I want to see your badge and your ID because I don't know who the fuck you are, and then I'm gonna ask you why you're questioning me.
Yeah, well, let's jam through these next two topics and then kind of wrap up the show. I think you have a question we can go over. Next one is, it's kind of a Baltimore question. Article comes out, 21% of all the jobs in Baltimore are government jobs. And I just kind of wanted to hear your guys' perspective on that. You know, these cities that are just rife with socialism are hell holes. And why anyone would accept socialism or communism or any kind of Democrat-leaning ideology is beyond me, with almost how much evidence is behind it.
Imagine
Donnie?
Having a tick the size of your leg. One-fifth of your population is living off the other. Four people are working to support this fifth job. It's not a job. It's a debt. It has to be paid. So essentially, it's a tick the size of your leg, and that's how their entire economic structure is set up. Yeah, best of luck with that. I mean, it's only a matter of time before that dies. That's non-sustainable. That's
mad. Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, and you know, the other thing that was cracking me up is, you know, say, well, the schools are bad in Baltimore and all this. They have the highest per capita in the nation on per student spending in their public schooling. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, it's not going to help them. Money's not going to help them.
Right.
No. Money's not going to help them. You get rid of the drug war. You legalize all drugs and then pour all... I mean, if we're going to play the status game here, you legalize all drugs, all drug tax money...
Well, not legalize. You decriminalize, because legalizing states that the government's allowing you to do something. So if you decriminalize it, then it's not even a...
Hear me out here, though.
I got you.
Let's play the status game for a second.
Okay.
Let's play the political game for a second. You legalize all drugs in Baltimore or Maryland... And all the drug money that the state collects through the tax revenues goes to building up those schools and paying for those schools. I guarantee you, and I'm not saying this is a success for socialist practices, I'm saying that they would be better off, because you would have less kids going to jail, less kids getting kicked out of school for drug offenses, less homes with daddy gone because he's in jail for selling drugs, et cetera, et cetera. You can just see, you know, you can drive blocks and blocks and blocks in Baltimore, and there's not one fucking thing there except for drug dealers.
Well, yeah, and prohibition commits. I mean, look at when we had prohibition and the bootleggers, you know, and you had tons of crime spike. I mean, they're already saying, I think they legalized marijuana in Colorado. Yep. They're already saying that the drug cartels in Mexico are hurting because of that one state that legalized drugs. So, yeah, if you legalize something, there's not going to be a black market, because why am I going to take the chance of buying on the black market?
Well, if you decriminalize it, there won't be a black market. But if you legalize it, there'll still be a black market to sell it under the tax or without tax.
Right, okay, yeah.
A black market, it doesn't...
I mean, you have a secret.
It doesn't matter if it's legal
in New York.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's legal or not. A black market means it's not taxed, essentially.
Right.
Not taxed by a... government or governing body.
But
let's just call it what it is, and I'm not advocating for taxes, but a 6% sales tax is not worth dealing with law enforcement. It's not worth it. At the volume of business you have to do to make that 6% worth 90 days in county, how much would you pay to not do 90 days in county? You know what I mean? $10 a day, maybe? If you're in county, how much would you pay to get out for the day? So why? Why would you even bother with it? I'm fully into the decriminalized thing. I'm saying when they legalize it, that black market all but disappears. And not only that, when they legalize it, you don't see anybody shooting each other over tomatoes. You can grow tomatoes on your porch. You can grow tomatoes on your porch. You don't have to go and buy and pay a sales tax for
them. No, yeah, for sure.
When they legalize, you can go grow it in your backyard.
And just think about what would happen to Baltimore if within Baltimore City limits all drugs were legal and taxed by Baltimore City.
I would go on to say that if they legalize heroin, I'm not going to go out and get a needle and buy. I mean, the government's not preventing me from making poor choices.
No, they legalized heroin in Switzerland, I believe, and they haven't had anyone die of a heroin overdose in 30 years.
Yeah, because, you know, it's just people think you need.
I mean, no. What they think is they think if morals aren't enforced through law. And this goes into the idea that you can legislate morality, which you cannot. That if we give up and say, okay, drugs are legal, then we've wasted everyone's time, all the officers' lives that were lost fighting the drug war, etc. So we've given up and the enemy has won, is the thought behind making all drugs legal.
Then they have to admit that they made a mistake. And then the other question, are they going to let everybody out that's in jail right now? Because, I mean, morally, you would have to.
That's what they just did in California.
Well, and aren't most prisons now in bed with the government? They're not government-owned. They're like corporations that are in bed pocket with the government. So they're making tons of money off of people being in jail.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the three largest donors to anti-marijuana legislation is the prison guards units, the police units, and the private jail owners.
Yeah.
So that's like, honestly, like, think about that. That's three people. That's three entities that need marijuana. They need drugs to be illegal so they can prop themselves up and keep sucking off the government teat.
Where's the virtue in virtue when vice is unavailable? If you banish all these things, you can't claim to be virtuous. You can't say, oh, this is good because we got rid of it. Nobody's tempted. You're not. The virtue is having an opportunity and walking away. You know, when you're stranded on a desert island for 5 years and you come back and say, hey, honey, I didn't bang any chicks while I was gone. Well, there was nobody else there. It's not, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, regulating stuff with the government is, I mean, the whole, I say legalized prostitution and people immediately say, oh, well, diseases would ride. No, because I'm not going to hire someone that doesn't. And you can have private organizations that can, they can pay to have them tested and they have a card. Just like you don't need the USDA to inspect meat. You can have a private organization do that. And I can either buy meat that's not inspected and risk getting sick, or I can pay a little extra and get, you know, good meat.
That is the closest proximity I've ever seen hooking and USDA put like right together.
And
any strict constitutionalist, right? Any strict constitutionalist, I want to let you know that the FDA, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, the EPA, anything that ends with an A that the government does is not constitutional and should be abolished. But, you know, a standing army is also not supposed to be allowed.
I would
have one.
Right. And I would argue that the only government organization that I think's really doing anything good was NASA. I mean, other than that, I mean,
that's a big boondoggle, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, you could argue that. I mean, but NASA was at least cool. The other ones aren't that cool. You know, NASA doesn't impress me.
Let's just make tyranny cool. That's the only thing.
Yeah, you know, that's going to be the new T-shirt. Let's make tyranny cool. Bring NASA back.
If you could, imagine
gas and juice is great.
Imagine the IRS had a website where you could go in and you could delegate where your taxes went to. NASA would probably be the best funded.
Yeah, but the military would get shit on.
Space travel.
They wouldn't be able to be the Department of Offense anymore. They'd have to actually just be the Department.
Oh my God! Yeah,
go anywhere.
Planned Parenthood would go up. Or go to the toilet, you know, all welfare would shut down.
Department of Education would shut down. I would literally, like, if I would check the box for NASA, because that's the only thing I want my money going towards, because I want to go to space. That's my dream, is to go to freaking space. I mean, I want to be Captain Picard with the British accent, saying,
dude, so, you can take a few drugs and be in a far different place, a better place.
Well, no, I can't, because the state says I can't. Okay, I want to fight dragons in front of my refrigerator, but I can't because the fucking state.
Last little thing, and then we'll go to the question, Aaron, that you had one of your military friends ask you. Charles Barkley said the other day, if we didn't have cops, it would be the Wild Wild West. Anything you want to...
The Wild Wild West had cops. I'm not sure if he realized that. We had marshals and rangers.
Yeah, there was one. There was, what was the average? I'm trying to remember here, but I'm pretty sure.
It wasn't that as big as it is now.
It was one sheriff per 10,000.
First off, Charles Barkley's a moron. Second off, that's saying that everybody's going to be violent if there's not a government. So naturally, I don't think that's possible. I mean, you can still have private security. I'm gonna defend myself. I think that's the ultimate goal. You should be able to defend yourself. So without cops, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be the Wild West. You're not going to see people raping, pillaging, and plundering.
The first person that tries to do that and then gets shot in the face.
Yeah,
and then
there's no risk.
And then no one's there to come pick up the body.
Well, it's kind of like I just saw an article where a guy, his 5-year-old daughter was getting raped, and he pummeled the guy to death. And they were like, charges are not being pursued. Well, no shit. Charges shouldn't be pursued. You were fucking trying to rape my daughter? Yeah, I'm going to beat the living shit out of you.
I'm going to choke you with your own blood.
Yeah.
I will drown you in your own blood.
Why is there even a question that self-defense should ever be charged? Legitimate self-defense. I mean, if I get in a fist fight with you, Dave, over a girl, and then I pull out a gun and shoot you, then that crosses the line. But if I have mutual combat with you, you know?
There's a lot of states. I believe Montana's one. There's a few other that as long as there's a witness, and you can even call a cop to be a witness, you can have a legitimate duel.
Yes, that like with guns?
I think with... As long as it's just the two parties involved, I think it doesn't matter.
I think both parties need to agree on the weapon. Like, I want a bow and arrow or, like, a hatchet. Like, it needs to be fucking...
I think it's fisticuffs.
Fisticuffs.
But, I mean, the cop can intervene if the other two people don't want him, even if that person's getting killed.
I mean, that's how... When I was a cop, I wouldn't arrest... If two people got in a fight, I'd be like, do either y'all want to press charges? But you'd have some cops that would, like, arrest them. I'm like, well, there's no victim if it was mutual. The only time there was a gray area is if you had a battered housewife and she was scared to press charges. But, I mean, you can... without cops, we would actually... I mean, you would still have cops in a stateless society. It would just all be private security that you voluntarily... hired, and you could fire if
but
they
what about the poor people? Everyone else should be enslaved to protect the poor people, dude.
But if you like poor people, then donate to poor people. I mean, if you're that concerned about it, because people aren't really concerned about poor people. That's their excuse. If they were concerned about poor people, then they'd be donating to charity.
Exactly. You know,
I noticed Charles didn't kick the shit out of the cameraman and the interviewer for that. For somebody who believes so much in the Wild West, and we all need these regulatory people around, seem to get along just fine in that room. Nobody got their ass handed to them. You know, Charles is claiming, oh, it's the Wild West unless we have some sort of violent regulatory agency, but nobody got beat up. The cameraman, you know, did his deal, and the interviewer, and they weren't fighting with each other. And that's about how 99.999% of all humanity goes on any given day.
Well, yeah, and there's this inherent threat that, or this inherent idea that without this overarching... you know, if you do this, then you'll be imprisoned or you know, prosecuted. Like, people are still going to be imprisoned and prosecuted if you kill someone without a government being present. Like, the town folk will capture you, and they will want you out of their society because you're dangerous. Yeah.
Bob Murphy has a really good presentation on YouTube. Robert Murphy, if you're going to look for it. But, you know, how would a private society, and it's essentially like nobody wants to deal with this person. It's almost like self-confinement. It's like a halfway house where you put yourself on parole, you done fucked up, you're making restitution, all kinds of things, and it makes a whole lot more sense where, you know, it's not everyone else in the community is paying the dime to have you locked down. If you can't manage to do this yourself after you fucked up, then you're probably going back out into a heavily armed population with no friends. Best of luck.
I mean, if you kill someone and get away with it and the whole town thinks you're a killer, they're not going to serve you. You know, you're going to go to the grocery store. They're going to say you're not welcome here. You're going to go try to, you know, buy some cat food. They're going to say no cat food for you, et cetera, et cetera. Ostracization works wonders. And plus, if everyone's well-armed, it's going to be really hard to kill someone unless you're a very sneaky dude. I mean, right. Because there's...
killing people's
easy. Murderers and serial killers like to kill when they know there's going to be no retaliation. Yeah. But if you jump somebody on the street and they've got a gun and you ain't got one, you better fucking run.
I mean, government has a monopoly on law enforcement. They have a monopoly on safety.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the cell phone market, and I know anybody that's familiar with our podcast is going to understand what I'm saying. You look at the cell phone market and how good it is when 10 companies are trying to provide the best cell phone. We get these crazy shit. I mean, your cell phone is out of date 5 weeks after you buy it. Could you imagine if that was going on with peace officers? If there was five private defense companies in your area fighting to try to be, not fighting, but vying to be the best defense in the area.
And you also have...
I don't see it being that necessary. When there's no violent monopoly trying to tell me I can't open carry a pistol, I'm just going to have a leg holster on every...
Yeah, but I still think you would need a private police force for a community, because not everybody is skilled enough to do so. I mean, and you can make it all volunteers. I mean, we have volunteer fire departments, and they work wonders. You know, you could have a community of volunteer police, and if they start oppressing people or harassing people, then you get rid of them. You know, if they're legitimately responding to a wife beating or a husband, well, you know, we'll say a wife beating her husband, because it happens.
That's what I tell all the cops too. Is like every cop that I've ever talked to since becoming a voluntarist, they go, "Well, you're trying to put me out of a job." They're not saying that, but they're saying that.
But you would have skills in a private
and I'm like,
private.
Do you know how much in demand ex-police officers would be?
Yeah, I'd want to hire you.
They would be out of control.
You have a private police force. All of this is very minimal violence. De-escalation is
definitely, and they would have to be retrained to do that.
Having that skill set, their primary is: I'm going to say, I'm going to yell, I'm going to spray, I'm going to fire. So, I mean,
well, I wouldn't say that's all of them. I mean, I was very. No. They actually started teaching this class called verbal judo to police officers, and it was a way to de-escalate situations. I mean, even when I was a bouncer, I didn't want to get in a fight. I would come up to you if you were causing a problem, and I'd say, "Hey, you need to leave." If they said no, I'd look at them. I said, "Look, you can either leave, or I'm going to make you leave." And after I gave that assertiveness, like, "Hey, look, this is the real deal. I'm going to force you out of this property that I have been hired privately to do," they usually listen. Very rarely did they square up. I mean, you're still going to have evil people no matter what kind of society you live in. There's going to be evil people.
Government can't fix these problems. You know,
right.
People will say, "Well, what about cat rapers?" I'm like, you can go rape a cat right now. Government doesn't fix that problem.
They don't. Like, if they did, we went. My greatest thing is, people are like, "Well, we need gun-free zones." Well, this is a murder-free zone, but we still have murders. I mean, America's a murder-free zone, but we still have murders.
Yeah, you can't. The government doesn't, you can't justify government with an idea that government fixes this issue when they can't fix the issue. We need government to fix this issue, but government can't fix this issue, but we still need government to fix this issue. It's like the whole Santa thing, you know. Oh, well, without Santa, the kids wouldn't get presents. Well, there's no Santa.
Yeah.
But who's going to give the kids presents?
How do the Jewish kids get presents?
Exactly. No, but, yeah. So you had a question you and Donnie.
This comes from my buddy Josh. He's a police officer. He was also in the Army with me. He's a very good friend of mine. He's actually pretty open to a lot of what I had to say. We get in arguments here and there. But he sent me this just for the podcast. He said, "The Constitution is..." And let me finish before we interrupt, okay? "The Constitution is what America should follow, right? The Fifth Amendment says no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Now, with that being said, if we were to go into to a type of ruling that I was saying with, you know, without government, how would it conform to our Constitution, seeing that there must be a process of law, then there must be someone overseeing the law, right? Good question. I mean, it's a good question for someone that is a statist. I'll go ahead and hit it first, and then if you and Donnie want to hire it, first off, we don't need the Constitution. It basically just, like I said before, it doesn't grant us any freedoms. It just prevents government from infringing our freedoms. And you would not live in a, you would still have rules. It's kind of like when you walk into a mall and you see the dress code and you have all these rules to follow. If you don't agree with them, then you're not allowed there. I mean, communities would be the same way. If I sign a lease to an apartment complex that says no marijuana, I'm voluntarily agreeing to that I don't have marijuana. And if I violate that principle, then I'm kicked out by a contract. You would still have consequences for breaking these rules. Ostracization works wonders. If I say if you steal, then you're not welcome here, and then I'm going to have a national database like eBay or something like that. eBay is an example because they have reviews that's going to put your name out there as a known theft, and nobody else is going to want to take the risk. So you pretty much right now you can have a guy on the street that robbed eight, nine people over a 9-year span, and they're still on the road, and they're still able to go to 7-Eleven to buy groceries, whereas in a society that doesn't have government, I'm willing to refuse service to that person. I'm not required by the government to serve that person. And I think that is a bigger consequence than anything the government can ever do.
Donnie?
So I think people look at the Constitution as if it is the solver of problems, when in reality it's exclusionary. And I'm going to roll the First and Second Amendment into the same thing, and that's property rights. In Article 1, Section 8, the right to property is no longer absolute, because now the government claims the right to tax and take things from you. So now they have to try and fix this problem by telling you, oh, but you're going to get something back out of it. Free speech and gun ownership are, it sounds crazy, but they're both property. If you go into a movie theater and you yell fire, you have just abridged the property rights of everybody in the theater. This is Murray Rothbard, this isn't me, but it's a really good example. Either you've just defrauded everybody in the movie theater by interrupting their show with your nonsense, or you've defrauded the owner who's now going to have to refund all those tickets. Either way, if you look at free speech from property rights, it gets really simple. Nobody cares if you get told to fuck off and it hurts your feelings, that you... curtailing speech in that manner doesn't make any sense, but all of the manner in which people claim I have a right to free speech, it's very simple to be done with property rights. The same thing goes for guns. When I have an absolute right to take your property, then I have to start trying to find reasons to give it back to you. So now all of a sudden, gun ownership is a special kind of property, and that's not supposed to be violated. Yet it's one of the most violated things, because it's the exception to the rule. The government can violate the rest of your property rights. Why is suddenly this sacrosanct? And come to find out, it isn't. All of the federal gun laws have always gone more restrictive. There are certain states that are kind of kicking back now and pushing back with concealed carry and open carry and things of that nature. But I'm just saying.
It's
exclusionary. The whole concept of the Constitution is exclusionary to begin with, and that is not how it's going to be. You can't fix the problem with that. You just create discrepancies.
I mean, you used to be able to buy a Tommy gun in a store, I believe in the 30s. I mean, and you didn't see people just going up shooting places because the gun laws were more relaxed. And people want to say, oh, well, the shootings are getting worse and worse. Well, that directly correlates with the gun laws getting worse and worse. Less people have the chance to protect themselves. I'm also going to touch on a section of Josh's question, which is part of the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, that says, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Well, what's just compensation? If it's my house that I grew up in, I'm sorry, there's no compensation that would be able to compensate me for losing something so meaningful to me. So what is directly that just compensation is what the market value is, according to the government. And half the time, I can tell you now, it's below market value. I mean, my parents' house got destroyed because they wanted to build an interstate. And they sold. I mean, they didn't really care. But what if they did care? Well, the government can claim it because of eminent domain or whatnot.
Yeah. You can't own property outright in the United States of America. A lot of people don't understand that. There's not one square inch on this country, in this country, that the government can't claim eminent domain on. They could say, oh, well, we want to put a post office there. Oh, well, we want to put a bomb silo there. Or a missile silo there. Oh, well, we want to do this. It doesn't matter. So if you don't have the highest claim on a property, being that you can do whatever, there's no one that can tell you what to do, you know, on that property or with that property, then you own it. If there's someone that can do it, then they own it. So right. What I tell people about this is, if you can own property in the United States of America, then why don't you go start, why don't you make a crack farm? Why don't you make a heroin farm? Why don't you make a weed farm in a state that hasn't legalized it? Why don't you make one of those on your property if you own it?
Right.
If you own that property. I had to tell this to one of my friends the other day. And they're like, well, that's against the law. I'm like, then...
Heroin, all you got to do is collect rainwater.
Heck, you can't even have fires in certain places on your property. And you can't, like you said, you can't even collect rain. I think in Oregon, it's against the law to collect rainwater.
It's like that in a lot of states.
What's next, though? The sun's hitting your house. That's a fine. Like,
oh, yeah. Your solar panels are hurting our fascist power companies, so we need you to take those down or face fines.
Well, and another thing that burns my bridges is when people are talking about homeowners associations. Well, how can you live in a homeowners association? I don't live in one, but how can you do? Well, that's voluntary. Like when you move to that community,
they can't do shit to you. They can't do shit to you.
They can't shoot me.
Well, actually, most times the way they do get absolute control is they lease that property out. The homeowner association buys that property. They own the house and the land. Well, then you buy it from them.
When you buy it from them, though, you agree to those terms. It's not like government.
Exactly.
Where they force it upon you. I mean, I can, if this area has a HOA, I'll just won't move there. I'm not going to live anywhere with an HOA. You're not going to tell me what to do on my property. I'm sorry. You know.
What, there are voluntary HOAs, and the whole, it's just basically people having a nice neighborhood that keeps the property values up, but it's a voluntary HOA.
Exactly. And I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that.
And you know what? If the guy in that next door doesn't want to be part of it, then you have that one house that looks shitty, and all the other neighbors look fine, and you know it works itself out. I mean, literally.
So, I want to take a crack at Josh's question. His question is, how can we have the Constitution and a voluntary society?
Basically, what he's saying is the Constitution is the fundamental structure for America, and I think his concern is how do we maintain our rights in a society without government. So what prevents you from coming to me and taking my property?
Okay.
So it's basically what he's saying.
My right to self-defense is, and me asserting my self-ownership, me asserting that this is my property, I'm willing to defend it with my life. There's only so many times you can rob somebody or get away with it before you end up dead in that kind of situation. There's also the thing of the whole idea of the Constitution. You know, not to give a line that a lot of conservatives are going to put out, because I would have been like, oh, shut up, you stupid liberal. To give a line that, you know, that was written by dead, white, rich slave owners, okay? 200 plus years ago. If your name is not on the Constitution, if it's not signed on that contract, it's null and void for you. You can't give consent for another. Just because you popped out of a vagina on this geographical location does not mean jack shit.
But if you don't like it, you can leave. You're free to leave.
Well, I'm native.
Right.
So, I can leave, but does that fix the problem?
No,
of you
you're
being,
trading one tyrant for another.
No. Not even for me, for you.
All right.
Like, I explained statism and taxation like this. It's a bunch of people. They can't see behind them, but all they see is in front of them is their neighbor, and they have a gun to their head saying, pay up. And it's a big circle. And they don't realize there's a gun to their head. So they think when they're telling you, hey, if you don't like it, leave, they don't realize that there's a gun behind them, that at some point, if they say something, that person behind them say, if you don't like it, you can leave. So at what point, you know, where's your line in the sand? If you're not going to run on your principles, then you just need to give up on life and you know.
Well, and my favorite thing is when they say you're free to leave, you're actually not free to leave. Like, you have to ask the government's permission to leave. It's called a passport, so you have to do that. You have to pay for that passport. And then where are you going to go? You're going to go to another place that's ruled by another ruler. So, and why would you want someone to leave when they're trying to better your freedom situation? I think it's just a defense mechanism when they run out of things to argue about.
And then they're
going to
give you that, it's always been like that, which is an appeal to antiquity, which it doesn't fix the problem. You know, what I try to help people do is okay, me and you, we're talking, all right? During our talking, you're going to get upset about something, and then you're going to get mad, and you're going to want to lash out at me. Not my ideas, me, all right? What you need to do is you need to pull yourself out. You need to be right here. I'm talking, you're talking. You need to be back here listening. You need to be thinking about what each person is saying. You need to critically break down what's going on and say, who's winning this? Who's right in this scenario? Who's wrong? And when you realize that you're openly advocating for fascism, for totalitarianism, for communism, for all these things that have been proven time and 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 time again to fail, and they're advocating for a voluntary society, no coercion, it is very hard to continue your argument. You know, like, I'm an abolitionist, okay? I'm against all forms of human slavery, whether it's economic slavery, whether it's hard slavery, whether it's whatever you want to define. Stealing my time, that's slavery to me, okay? Stealing my property, that's slavery because you stole time from me. When I tell people I'm an abolitionist and I say I'm against all forms of human slavery, it's very hard for you to say, well, I'm for limited slavery.
It is true.
I mean, you sound like a nut job. Well, I'm just for limited slavery. There needs to be somebody with a whip. You know, like, it doesn't, you realize that you're the bad guy, and once all it takes is you realize that you're advocating for the bad idea in the scenario, in an argument, you either have to get angry and yell, or you have to say, I need to think about this, because this is a lot of shit that just got laid in my lap. Because I went 26 years without ever hearing this. Like, I've heard anarchy 1,000 times, and I always think it's, you know, the ANCOM version where they're throwing bricks through wall windows and doing crazy shit. I never heard voluntarism. And I literally tell people, if you just Google voluntarism and read about it,
it's watch hard not to agree with it.
Watch a few videos, you're either going to get mad at yourself for not realizing that this is how it should have been the whole time, or you're going to bury your head in the sand, live in fear, and refuse to hear any outside observation that is juxtaposed to your indoctrination. Plain and simple. And I hate to use big words, but that is the best way I can describe this. So, is there any more questions?
No, that's it for this week.
Okay, cool. That was a really good question. You know, that's a valid question that a lot of constitutionalists have. It's like, you know, we need watchmen. Well, yeah, I want a voluntary watchman.
Right, yeah, you know, we should have some more questions next week. I have a couple Army buddies working for some questions, and then also hit us up on Twitter.
Yeah, hit us up on Twitter, at Seeds of Liberty. We'll probably make a little at Seeds of Liberty Force to Freedom, a little maybe F2F or something for you and Donnie to run jointly. Donnie should be having a better mic next week. We'll work on him getting a better webcam.
Michael.
Huh? Michael? You're getting a better Michael next week? Okay.
Well, actually, he's going to force everybody to pay for his mic through the form of taxation. It's not theft.
Yeah, when you're done with that mic, I want it mailed to my house because I paid for it, Jack.
Never going to end.
Oh, that's the worst thing to say to a cop, by the way. You never say, well, I pay your salary, motherfucker, and I want your ass out of here.
Yeah, because then they're just going to respond back, well, I pay for it too?
Well, government employees don't pay taxes. Donnie has the best. He has the brilliant.
Well,
I've
yeah,
never
it's
heard
like
his,
a, it's cords hooked into each other, and they all, you know, pretty much you're paying.
No,
yourself.
No, Donnie broke it down, and I've never heard it broke down that way. He says government jobs are artificially high and then taxed, so the government gets back money so they can delegate it elsewhere.
Yeah,
and I've never thought about that.
Yeah, it's a shell game. Yeah, you take money from the soldiers who are 100% tax money, and you give it back to the IRS so they can put it somewhere else if they want it. Yeah, it's just three-card Monty. If you actually were to do an audit on the government, I mean...
Oh, God. Yeah. They tried, and they were like, nah, we're going to vote not to do it.
We investigated ourselves and we found we did nothing wrong.
I wish.
Next question, please. But yeah, guys, I probably won't be on the next show. It'll probably just be Aaron and Donnie. I encourage you, if you like this show, if this show pissed you off, if this show pissed you off, let us know. We want to know. We want to help you.
And we won't belittle you. I mean, you have your ideals. We have ours. We're just saying ours are better.
No one's going to shame you for being indoctrinated. That doesn't work. We know that.
I think calling someone. We're also instituting a 2-drink minimum. So.
Yeah. Oh, next time there. Well, I'm going to start drinking beer. Actually, I brew beer, so I'm going to brew a Seeds of Liberty official beer, and it'll be drunk at our podcast.
Nice. I like that. Everyone. I know we went a little long on this. This was the first episode of this. This is going to be a weekly event for the channel, for the podcast. And it's Force to Freedom. Seeds of Liberty presents Force of Freedom. And we're going to keep knocking this out. If you want to be on the show, these two guys would love to talk to you. All you need is a Skype and a webcam and a microphone. We don't care what you got to say. We don't care how mad you get. We want to talk to you. So if you're curious about this thing, don't be shy. Hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on Facebook. Facebook.com/SOL podcast. If you have any questions, want to find out any way to download this show or watch this media, go to theseedsofliberty.com. If you want to donate in any way to help us pay for podcast hosting, please use Bitcoin. I think we're about to take down our PayPal. Some kind of scary stuff just came out about PayPal. And we're going to be looking into maybe even setting up Patreon or some other kind of direct funding for the show. But I really appreciate you guys listening to this. Thank you so much, Donnie and Aaron, for agreeing to start this show up with me. And I really hope this is fun and everyone likes it. Yep. Any closing sentence, anything?
No, we'll see you next week. I guess, are you going to put our Twitters below us right now, or...?
They're not going to be below you, but they'll be in the description for the show.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter. I enjoy getting in arguments.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Have a great evening or day or whatever time you listen to this.